Paul, thank you very much. I mean, I think, as most of you know, not what we often do is look at a passage and sort of expound it. But we thought it'd be good today just to take a step back and think about how the Christian faith interacts with Corona. And I guess particularly trying to think, what difference does it make to have a Christian faith in the middle of all that's going on? If I've got faith, how does that change the way that I view what's happening? I thought it might be helpful just to start by thinking, if you're here last week, you remember we looked at the story of Lazarus. And Jesus had a really close friend called Lazarus. And this is a moment where he personally encounters death and disease. So he gets news that his friend is ill on the point of death. Lazarus's sisters send him this news. They're called Mary and Martha. And when Jesus hears it, he sort of deliberately waits where he is for 2 days before he goes to see his friend Lazarus, which means that by the time he's got there, Lazarus is dead. And both Lazarus's sisters, Mary and Martha, independently greet Jesus with the same words. They say, "If you'd been here, my brother would not have died." And I guess that may be slightly how we feel in the face of coronavirus. You know, if God was here, then things might be different. Where is he? Why hasn't he showed up? Is he in some kind of self-isolation? If there is a God, what is he up to? How do we view faith from the view coronavirus from the perspective of faith? And I want to suggest three things that mark out the Christian as we approach this, and then we'll just chuck it open to discussion and see where we go. And the first is, I think the Christian will not be surprised by what is happening. So we'll be saddened, we'll be sorrowful, we may even be angry. But I don't think we'll be thrown, we won't despair in the face of what's going on. Think of Jesus as he stands beside the tomb of his friend Lazarus. As he sees Mary and Martha weeping, we're told that he wept, shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept. Why does he weep? Well, it's not because he's missing Lazarus, because what he's about to do is raise him from the dead. I think it's as he looks around him, what he sees is the impact of death and disease on the world. And there's a kind of sorrow. He's not indifferent, he's compassionate. But more than that, there's almost an indignation. He looks at this and says, this isn't how it is supposed to be. This is not what the world is created to be. And I think it really captures the Christian worldview, which has always been that God created the world perfect, and yet it has been spoiled by evil, particularly by the sin of humanity, that we think we know better than God and we push him to one side. And so there's a very real way in which our world is frustrated. It's not as it's supposed to be. So if you were to read Romans 8, the language Paul uses there is of that as the world being frustrated and longing to be set free from death and disease, longing to be redeemed. In other words, the Christian knows that we're not in heaven now, and therefore when we confront death and disease, it's sad, but it won't throw us completely. A few years ago, I went with my wife to North Cyprus. We went to the city of Salamis, the ancient ruined city. It was an amazing place to wander around. There was hardly anyone there the day we went. You could see the majesty of it, all these sort of ruined columns. And at one glance, you could see both the wonder of the city as it was, but also the fact that it wasn't what it was. It was ruined. I think the same is true of our world. When we look at our world, we see majesty, but we also see brokenness. We see the wonder of creation, and yet we see it spoiled by death and disease and decay. And so because we know that as Christians, when we counter disease and death, it's sad, but it doesn't throw us. We're not surprised by it. And I think it's worth pausing at this point, because someone might say, well, hang on, isn't this all rather old-fashioned, all this talk of death and of God and of evil? Haven't we sort of moved beyond that as a society? But I think if the Christian has to think, how does our faith respond to what's going on? The same would be true of other people in society as well, like the atheist. So let me quote to you from Richard Dawkins. He says, "In a universe of electrons and selfish genes, blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt. Other people are going to get lucky, and you won't find any rhyme or reason in it, nor any justice." He says, "There's no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference." Except that the one thing you won't find in atheists is blind, pitiless indifference. And that's not how we're responding to this crisis. I mean, if you're just going to view it from an evolutionary point of view, you can argue that coronavirus is a perfectly good evolutionary disease. It targets the weak and the old. But no one is really able to look at this disease with that pitiless indifference. We're angry by it, we're upset by it. If evil doesn't exist, how can I be angry with it? I don't think it's coherent. But I suspect that many people probably don't have that kind of cold atheism of Richard Dawkins. For many people, what we believe in today is more just a sense of progress. So John Gray puts it like this. He says, the progress of humanity has replaced belief in divine providence. In other words, in the ancient world, the Greek world, the Eastern world, people used to view history as being essentially a circle. Things went round in circles. And it was really a Christian idea that history was moving somewhere, that we had a world that was broken and needed to be redeemed, that we were moving into a new heaven and a new earth. And I think what people often want to do today is keep that idea of progress, but take God out of it. So God is replaced by knowledge or technology. As we grow in knowledge, well then we'll move towards a more enlightened society, a more powerful society. After all, you know, we put a man on the moon, right? When I was a kid, smoked salmon was a treat for Christmas Day. Now you can get it in your sandwiches at Pret any day of the week. This is progress. But of course, coronavirus slightly undermines all of that, because I kind of thought that plagues were a thing that happened in medieval times, not now. All our knowledge and technology can't seem to deal with this. In other words, if we're going to dismiss God, then we have to say, why do we think that we're going to be on this path of progress? Why would there be redemption? Who is going to redeem? And of course, it's not just coronavirus that undermines that logic of progress. Yeah, the assumption is that knowledge and technology will lead us into this greater good. But it's not really what we see around us. Look at the internet. That is knowledge and technology coming together, isn't it? What does it do? Well, yes, sure, it's used for good, but it's also used for evil. I mean, it's really revitalized the slave trade, hasn't it, with human trafficking. That's hardly progress. The technology that puts on a man on the moon is the technology that fires a atomic bomb. So if we've got this sort of blind belief in progress, we have to ask, how does that belief interact with what is going on here? But for the Christian, I think what is happening is hard, but we're not surprised by it, not surprised by the events of coronavirus, nor indeed by the way that we react to it. In Romans 8, Paul says that creation is frustrated and needs redemption, but he also says that we as human beings are as well, that actually within our own hearts, all of our actions, all of our thoughts are in some sense tainted by evil. You know, if you go to the spas, the royal spas at Bath, all the water there tastes slightly of sulfur because it bubbles up through minerals. Everything is tainted with that taste of the minerals that it comes through. Well, so it is with our lives. They're tainted with the taste of sin. So it's one of the things that people want to say in the middle of coronavirus is, isn't it great the way we're pulling together, this sense of solidarity? And then we sort of point the finger at other people out there who are doing the panic buying, and they're the people undermining it. But I think we all know that's slightly too simplistic, because actually when I look within my own heart, I see things that I'm proud of and things that I'm ashamed of. So it won't surprise me when within my culture I see the best of humanity and the worst of humanity coming out at the same time. So I think if we have this sense that this is a good world but spoiled by sin, we'll find this hard, but we'll be able to begin to understand what's going on. So I think the Christian isn't surprised by what's happening. I think secondly, the Christian has hope in the middle of what's happening. So as Jesus stands by the tomb of Lazarus, he weeps, but it's not just simple emotion that he offers. Because the next thing he does is he gets them to roll back the stone. They're all waiting for some awful stench of death to come out. And he calls to Lazarus, come out. And Lazarus comes out alive. It's the most extraordinary moment. He's living. And then what Jesus does is he goes from there into Jerusalem and he dies on the cross. He suffers in our place, which at one level means that God has come alongside us. He's not deserted us. They say that in the plague in Rome in AD 165, as the Roman citizens were leaving the city, they met Christians coming into the city to care for the sick. Well, God has come alongside us in the Lord Jesus. He suffered. But more than that, when he suffered, he paid the price for our sin. That's what the Bible tells us. So the picture of redemption that we're longing for is that of someone's paying a price to set someone free. So you might think perhaps of an ancient debtor's prison, and someone is in prison because they owe a amount of money. And what they need is someone to pay that money so they can be set free. So they come out of some medieval prison, which would make lockdown look like a walk in the park, and they come out into the fresh air and into the blue skies above. So when Jesus died on the cross, he paid the penalty for all our sin, that we might be set free, that we might come out into what in time will be a new creation. As we see Jesus risen from the dead, he promises that he's going to lead us into a new creation where there will be no more death or crying. Revelation 20 says this, there'll be that God will wipe away every tear from our eyes, death shall be no more, nor will there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain, for the former things will have passed away. And this would be a real physical place. You know, the ancients had a sense that when you died, you'd pass into some kind of oblivion. But the hope the Bible talks about is a real, tangible heaven to come. And again, it might be that you say at this point, well, hang on, isn't that just pie in the sky when you die? Well, if Jesus promises eternal life, that's one thing. But when he dies and then comes back to life again, well, now suddenly we have all the more reason to believe him. And it's not only that, but whatever my view of the future is going to impact my life today. If I have hope, then that hope will free me from anger and fear. It'll free me to love. It'll give me energy to serve others. So if I have hope, then in the face of grief, I have hope that death is not the end. If I have hope, then if I die and I stand before the Lord, I've got hope that I'll be forgiven. If I have hope, then when I see shops boarded up, when I see cancelled signs going up everywhere, well, I have hope that there's not just a recovery coming, but there's a renewal, a new creation to come. So we have hope. But let's think a little bit more about how this affects the Christian today. I think the third distinctive of the way the Christian views coronavirus is that we have a sense of purpose. I think for many of us, this whole crisis has just made us question what we're living for. What is our purpose? Maybe we've had to find a new job. Maybe we've had to reinvent our identity to some degree. I think we all love being busy, and if we're not able to be busy, it sort of takes away some of our sense of purpose. Well, if I'm living for myself and my happiness, then this will undermine all of that. But for the Christian, the Christian's ultimate purpose is to live for God and for his glory. You know, think about a compass. The needle will always point to the north. If you take it and you turn around 180 degrees, you can spin the whole casing. The needle will still head back to the north. You can take a Christian's life and turn it upside down, and we will still head back to seeking God's glory. If my ultimate purpose in life, if I think the greatest good in the cosmos is my happiness, then God has let me down terribly here. But if I'm living for him and I think that his glory is the greatest good in the cosmos, then even if I can't understand exactly what's happening at the moment, I still have a sense of purpose that I'm living for him. And as I look at his death on the cross, I sense that actually the story of the cross is one of suffering followed by glory. So if I'm suffering now, even if I fully can't understand why God is allowing this to happen, I have this sense that I still have the hope of glory. It's very much the story behind every great life, isn't it? Think of any hero of yours. Think of, I don't know, someone like a Nelson Mandela. You take all the suffering out of his life. What are you left with? Something very bland. The long walk to freedom becomes the short amble to something I had before. Think of novels that we read, movies that we watch. So often there's a pathway from suffering through to some kind of redemption. Well, what if that's because the great story of our world is one of a movement from suffering to redemption? This doesn't mean I fully understand what's going on, but it means that I can take my place, I can trust God. Think about Mary, Martha, Lazarus' sisters. Remember what they said to Jesus? If you'd been here, my brother would not have died. But if Jesus had been there and their brother hadn't died, then they wouldn't have seen the glory of Jesus as he raised their brother from the dead. Now, this doesn't mean that I fully understand everything that God is doing, but it means that I have a purpose of pursuing his glory and I can keep trusting him even in the midst of this. Actually, Romans 8 says, God's ultimate purpose in my life is to make me more like Christ. That's an extraordinary thing. I look at Jesus, I see his love, I see his compassion, I see his power. And God is making me more like him. So the Christian has a sense of purpose. And I think one of the questions we get forced to ask through something like this is, what are we living for? a cold rationalism, a naive sense of progress? Or are we living for the God who came into our world, who suffered alongside us, and was raised and offers us hope? So look, that's three thoughts about ways in which the Christian approaches coronavirus. I think the Christian isn't thrown by this. I don't think we're surprised by it. I think we have hope in the face of it. And I think our fundamental purpose in life remains unchanged, seeking the glory of the God who was crucified, who was risen, and who calls us to be with him for eternity. That's some thoughts for me. I just wanted to sort of put something on the table and then chuck it out and see where we go, see what people want to say. So I think this is an opportunity for interaction, and that any thoughts anyone's got, just chuck them out, questions, comments.